The EU is increasingly preparing for a no-deal Brexit scenario as the UK Prime Minister Theresa May is weakened after pro-Brexit ministers' resignations from her cabinet. Among the many sensitive issues at stake is that of a hard versus soft border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. While both the European Union and United Kingdom do not want a hard border, disagreements over how to resolve this may very well derail the entire Brexit process. Join me, Waqar, as we discuss the UK's future borders with the EU tonight. Let's firstly cross over to our correspondent, who is joining us live now from Brussels. Jerome, what can you tell us about this issue of the Irish border?
Well, we keep hearing this phrase, backstop, and people keep asking me when I'm out and about, they say, what does backstop mean? Backstop is something that was agreed last December between Brussels and the UK government, and it basically says that in the absence of another solution, Northern Ireland would remain in the EU's customs union. It means that there would be an agreed tariffs on certain goods, and that there would be no physical border checks on the border. That's the backstop. The problem is they can't really agree on it, on this situation. You have in the situation, in Northern Ireland, you have the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party. It's very pro-British. It's actually propping up Theresa May's government. And they're saying, look, we don't want any special status in Northern Ireland that differentiates us from the United Kingdom. They say we are part of the UK. We don't want any special status. They feel it would undermine the actual status of Northern Ireland. It's very, very complicated. When you look at Theresa May's white paper on the future relationship with the EU, Michel Barnier, the EU's chief negotiator today, we were at the press conference, he picked it apart piece by piece in great detail. And I think the reason he did pick it apart in a certain amount of detail, I have to say it was quite technical, is because he wants to show that from the EU side, they know what's going on. On the other hand, it appears that on the UK side, there's all sorts of turmoil. We have massive turmoil within Theresa May's government, not necessarily now within the cabinet as we had before David Davis and Boris Johnson left, but certainly if you look at our backbenchers, there's major divisions there. And then if you look at the main opposition party, the Labour Party, there are divisions within the Labour Party and within the general public. That's why Jeremy Corbyn, now some say he's actually pro-Brexit, even though the official line of the party is that they would like to remain. But some say the reason that the Labour Party isn't pushing for another referendum is because it would damage the Labour Party, because the actual society is so divided in terms of the ordinary citizens. We went out on the streets today here in Belgium for the last couple of hours for Press TV. You'll see it in the report later on. To get the opinion of citizens. We spoke to a lot of people from the UK, they're here on holidays and so on, and from right across the European Union. It was fascinating to hear the views. You might think that because of all the chaos in the UK, which is making this whole process so difficult, that people would say to us that, look, of course, Brexit is a terrible thing. Actually, a lot of people said to us that this shows a huge amount of bureaucracy within the European Union, and they said that we would like our own countries to leave the EU. So it's a very divisive issue, but we've been speaking to so many economists and so many experts before the referendum and since the referendum, and they are saying to us, that the people I've been speaking to say, there will be no winners at the end of the day.
Very well, Jerome, we'll leave there at that, but of course, as always, we appreciate your reporting for us. Our guests for tonight's discussion are director of the Bruges Group, Robert Ould, who is joining us live now from London. And we're also joined by author and lecturer, Jonathan Fryer, who is also joining us live now from the British capital. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Jonathan, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts, Jonathan, on this very complex issue of a hard versus soft border with Ireland? Jonathan, if you can hear me, I just wanted to ask you, what do you make of this issue of the hard versus soft border with Ireland? Okay, and we might be having some issue there with Jonathan's connection. Robert, I'll go to you if I may. What do you make of this entire issue of the hard versus soft border?
Largely, the issue has been whipped up by the European Union as a way of forcing the UK to still comply with its rules, with the European Union rules and trade policy regulations, even when Britain is outside of the European Union. And Ireland, under Leo Varadkar, who is the leader of Ireland, the Irish Taoiseach, otherwise known as their prime minister, is someone who's fundamentally pro-EU. That was his first involvement in Irish politics, and that is coming first. And there needn't be a border, a hard border, between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, which remains in the UK. But the European Union is pushing for Britain to do whatever it wants with it and saying it won't accept any arrangement so far from the UK, any offer of ways to solve the different issues that will arise once Britain is outside of the European Union, unless we fully comply with what the European Union wants. And this is somewhat unfair. It's actually against the interests of people of the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, and is very unreasonable on behalf of the European Union. There needn't be a hard border. There is already a different tax policy and VAT policy and different currency between the Republic and Northern Ireland, between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And there is a situation where there can be differences once they are out, but it can be resolved through technological solutions. And there already exists border checks in terms of coaches may be stopped from traveling to the Republic, to Northern Ireland, and vice versa, when they have people aboard for immigration purposes. There is already cameras on the Republic side of the border. So adding some more infrastructure, such as technological solutions, is actually possible, and it would not create major difficulties because these differences already exist. So the European Union should stop being so intransigent and should work with Britain and accept that we cannot go the complete way that the European Union wants, but they can actually have some technological solutions and policies in place that would allow for a relatively frictionless border and for trade to continue, for people to continue to move. There needn't be a hard border, but it's the European Union who's being intransigent and saying the UK must comply with everything the EU wants. They should meet us halfway at the very least.
Jonathan, what do you make of that? Because, you know, to be fair to the EU, Jonathan, the EU says it does not want, in fact, a hard border, but it is seemingly making life hard for the UK, isn't it?
Well, I think it's important to point out that, of course, Michel Barnier, the EU's principal negotiator, has not rejected Mrs. May's plan, both for Northern Ireland and indeed for the whole Brexit process, but has highlighted what, from the EU's point of view, are areas of difficulty. And without a doubt, the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland is a key issue. I don't share your other guests' optimism about the viability of technological solutions, perhaps some far distant point in the future that may be possible, but at the moment I don't think the technology adequately does exist, and there is a real worry that if any sort of infrastructure, physical infrastructure, is put on the border, this could endanger the Belfast Agreement, which has kept peace more or less in Northern Ireland in particular and along the border for several years. So the EU is ready to discuss matters. It's not rejected things outright, but there is a huge gap between what Mrs. May is asking for and what the EU believes is actually feasible.
And that's a very good point, isn't it, Robert? Because, you know, for many of us outside of the UK, we don't appreciate how sensitive this issue of Ireland really is. But as Jonathan there spoke about, you know, the Belfast Agreement has maintained peace in that area. Do you think the UK at some point, Robert, will have to bow possibly to the EU's demands in this regard?
Well, the Belfast Agreement did not actually create the peace. What created the peace was the fact that the terrorist organisations, particularly the Republican terrorist organisations, were heavily infiltrated by British intelligence, and they could not act in any meaningful way without the authorities knowing. They were deeply compromised at every single level, with informers right at the very top of the IRA and Sinn Féin. I didn't actually go further in discussing who those people were, but it was throughout the whole organisation, and the fact that they had been fought to a standstill because of the intelligent victories and because of a decisive policy from British security services, the IRA were essentially defeated and could not move without their lives being ended. And that was made quite clear time and time again. That created the peace. The Belfast Agreement isn't actually really relevant to the European Union. There's been freedom of travel between the UK and the Republic of Ireland, well, since before the Republic of Ireland actually existed, since 1922, when the Irish Free State was created. And the Belfast only mentions, it's around 10,000 words, so 10,000 pages of all different matters, and only once does it mention the European Union, and then tangentially. It is not actually relevant. This is, you know, we cannot allow ourselves to be blackmailed by the bogus threat of terrorism and attacks from Northern Ireland from dissident Republican groups who are not representative and have no support amongst even the Roman Catholic, even the Republican part of Northern Ireland's population, and certainly no support within the Republic of Ireland either. And there is already a degree of border infrastructure, including cameras on the Republic of Ireland side. And there is actually already monitoring of the border. So this is just exaggeration and more scaremongering. And Britain will not, whatever happens, be putting up a border between the Republic and Northern Ireland. It will not be the UK that does that. It would be, if indeed it does happen, which I doubt, it would be the Republic of Ireland that would enact it at the behest of the European Union, no doubt built by either Polish or Lithuanian immigrants into the Republic of Ireland. But it would be the Republic of Ireland that would bring in the border at the orders of their, essentially, the masters in the European Union, who have already dictated that Ireland, Republic of Ireland, must give up its policy of neutrality, which Leo Varadkar, the Irish Taoiseach, has sold to the European Union. Mm-hmm. But there are ways of finding solutions, but the European Union is just using this to bully Theresa May, who is very vulnerable and quite easily pushed around, as we have seen from the EU. She's had to make compromise after compromise to the EU. But there are reasonable ways of solutions, and there already is a difference between taxation policy between the Northern Ireland and Republic mm-hmm. of Ireland. Difference in VAT policy. There are already immigration checks. There are some degrees of border infrastructure already. But it would be the European Union that would be making that happen, and I don't think they will. So let's call their bluff. This is bogus. Force them to actually recognise our solutions are reasonable, and they can have trusted trader infrastructure between and trusted trader agreements between various different companies that would be exporting. And ultimately, most of Northern Ireland's trade is with the United Kingdom. So for a small degree, a small percentage of Northern Ireland's GDP, you have to bow to everything the European Union wants is just ridiculous, and Theresa May should.
If I could just, Robert, get a reaction of what you said from Jonathan, because Jonathan, you know, one thing that Robert mentioned, which I wanted to highlight, and you can obviously respond to his other points as well, is that Theresa May genuinely is quite weakened at this point, especially with the recent resignations. Do you think that she will possibly get pushed around? Because at least from where I'm standing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that the UK has more to lose in this specific case when it comes to this question of the Irish border.
Well, I agree that Theresa May's position is very weak indeed. And she is being bullied, but she's not being bullied by the EU. She's being bullied by the right wing of her own party, the Conservative Party, of as many as 60 Conservative MPs who actually disapprove of the plan that she came up with a couple of weekends ago for a so-called soft Brexit, which is the plan that's being discussed with Brussels at the moment, and would rather have a hard Brexit, in which case Britain would leave the EU and break off a lot of its links to the EU that it has at present. So she is in a very vulnerable position, and she is under huge pressure from her own party. And there's considerable speculation in Britain at the moment, not least in the Westminster Village, as we call the area around Parliament, that the government could fall. And that then there would be a general election. And this, of course, is very unfortunate at a time when there's only 8 months left to try to come to an agreement with the EU before Britain leaves on the 29th of March next year. So, yes, she's very vulnerable. Yes, she is being bullied, but I don't think she's being bullied by Brussels. She's being bullied by her own MPs.
Robert, I see you disagreeing. Go ahead.
Well, the European Union certainly has bullied Theresa May, and she's had to abandon all of her red lines and change her policy completely from her Lancaster House policy, which was advocating an agreement between Britain and the European Union, but it wouldn't be one where we're essentially a vassal state in vassalage to the EU, which is what Britain would be with her Chequers plan. And it's actually not just Conservative MPs who are up in arms about this. It's most of the Conservative Party, most Conservative voters, and indeed, actually, most people in the country. According to opinion polling, this Chequers plan does not have public support. It is, people are not in favour of it. And this is one reason why Theresa May has lost further support amongst the country. But just to give you an example of the bullying that is taking place, Leo Varadkar has said that if the UK reclaimed its fishing waters, then we shouldn't be able to use Irish airspace, which is a preposterous remark. Is he really going to cut the island off from the rest of the Europe if indeed Britain reciprocates? He's actually threatening to close airspace to the UK if we take back, under international law, our fishing waters. Preposterous remark. Preposterous.
But Robert, to be fair, though, I mean, I imagine, Robert, that from the EU's point of view, it needs to, in essentially, create an example out of the UK, because obviously the UK is leaving the EU, and obviously, I imagine, from the EU's point of view, it needs to preserve its own interests and ensure that others aren't encouraged to leave it as well.
Well, the Irish Taoiseach should be careful that Britain doesn't reciprocate and make an example out of the Republic of Ireland, which we certainly don't want. We are not going to tolerate any more threats. This is enough. And the British people are quite fed up with this, and Theresa May cannot make any more concessions to the European Union, or, rightly so, she would lose her position. And that has been made quite clear. So really, let's come and have proper negotiations. Let's make sure that there's a good, friendly relationship between the UK and the Republic of Ireland and what's left of the European Union. That is what we want, and that's, we absolutely legitimately have the right to ask that. And after all, the referendum voted to leave the European Union, and that should be respected. I know the European Union doesn't respect referenda, and they certainly don't when it comes to Ireland, when the Irish people had voted against the Nice Treaty, they were made to vote again. When they voted against the Lisbon Treaty, they were made to vote again. They brought the Lisbon Treaty back as EU constitution, and they pushed that through. The Irish people are actually deeply sceptical of the European Union and been bullied by the EU into austerity measures when they mistakenly joined the Euro. So really, we need to recognise that the European Union is bullying, but of course it's time that the Irish people and the British people stood up to the EU and made sure that we can have a decent arrangement and one that does actually work in the benefits of an independent UK and the Northern Ireland and Republic.
All right, so let me just get a reaction from Jonathan, if I may, Robert. Jonathan, you know, we keep talking about the need for, obviously, compromise on both sides, but the EU, Jonathan, as we know in the past days, has been genuinely preparing for a no-deal Brexit. That's what the EU has been telling many of its different organizations, many of the member states, to prepare for a no-deal Brexit. Why do you think that is occurring if the EU and Britain both say that, listen, 80% of this agreement is already set in stone? Why is that 20%, so at this point problematic that it may very well result in no deal?
Well, let's first of all make very clear that both sides are very keen that there should not be a no deal situation. That could be catastrophic. It would have huge effects on, for example, the movement of food into this country. We're very heavily dependent on imports from other parts of the European Union, and a no deal situation, which would lead to massive tailbacks of lorries and things, would be disastrous. But there is quite a lot, there are quite a few really major issues that have to be settled in negotiations. I would take issue with Robert politely in by saying that of course there have to be concessions in negotiations. If one side says we're not going to make any concessions at all, then it's impossible to have negotiations. Any business would make that clear as well. So clearly there will have to be good discussions, with hopefully with good faith on both sides, though Mrs. May is indeed handicapped by the fact that she doesn't have strong enough support within her own party, let alone within Parliament. I do agree with Robert when he said that the British public isn't very happy with Mrs. May's soft Brexit plan. That's true, because many people in Britain are saying, well, look, if we follow her plan, basically we'll have to follow EU rules, and without being able to now be able to fix rules and be at the table of the meetings. So we're worse off than we are now. And maybe we ought to stay in. And maybe indeed there will be another vote, not a second vote in out, but on Mrs. May's deal, with the people being given the opportunity to say, well, is this really what you voted for? Is this what you want? And if so, then we leave. If not, we'll then see what happens.
Robert, how do you react to that? And also, how do you react to the question then of a hard no-deal Brexit?
Well, ultimately, there will be a deal, I'm sure. But it hopefully will not be the Chequers plan. It would be something where there would be mutual recognition of different standards between the UK and the rest of the European Union, or the remainder of the EU, recognising that we don't have to conform exactly to EU regulations, but actually can have divergence as long as we aim to meet similar ends and have standards sort of a similar quality, and that there would be protection in place and standards would be upheld. That would be reasonable, but so far it's one of being told you must do this, and we've moved far enough. The British government has made not necessarily compromises, but it's made concessions after concession, and that's really gone as far as it can possibly go at this political and democratic extent of how many concessions the UK can make. It's gone as far as it possibly can. It's time for Michel Barnier to get approval from Chancellor Merkel of Germany to have a more flexible position when discussing these very important matters with the UK. And ultimately, there would be, I hope, an agreement, but not this agreement. This is absolutely very wrong. And after all, Theresa May did say that no deal is better than a bad deal. We need to be clear, this is what is actually an offer from Britain that hasn't even been accepted yet fully by the European Union, is indeed a bad deal. And the European Union's legal interpretation of the current discussions are actually very different from how the British government interprets what has already been agreed. But I'd say the intransigence comes from the European Union. There needs to be more movement from their side because, you know, Britain's gone as far as it possibly can. And ultimately, if there is more concessions from the UK, this would create a change in Theresa May's leadership. That would be no doubt ended, as Conservative MPs, many of the people in the country, have made clear. That doesn't actually mean there would be a general election. Indeed, usually when there's a change of Prime Minister in Britain, it doesn't actually result in a general election. That's not really part of our constitution. So, you know, I think we can move forward and have an agreement with the European Union, but we need to start standing firm and say, actually, okay, we've made you many offers already and we cannot actually go any further.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to have to leave that as our final word, but of course, we do appreciate both your contributions to tonight's discussion. That was the director of the Bruges Group, Robert Ould, who was speaking to us live from London, and we were also joined by author and lecturer, Jonathan Fryer, who was also speaking to us live from London. And of course, viewers, as always, we appreciate you joining us as well. Until next time, good night.